Welcome to Treasures Old and New from ART. Hi, I'm Joy Jackson. This month it's something old. I just returned from the Nostalgia Expo in Cincinnati, where one of the recreations, as well as one of the presentations, was on Zorro. ART has been working hard on a Zorro project for the last couple of years. Any day now, I'll get it done. I thought it would be fun to listen to an old-time radio show featuring the inspiration for Zorro, the Scarlet Pimpernel. The series is about a man and his wealthy friends who pose as cowardly fops while secretly going off to France to rescue folks from La Guillotine. Episode 8, The French Ambassador, Ramon Duloc.
They seek him here, they seek him there. Those Frenchies seek him everywhere. Is he in heaven? Is he in hell? That damned elusive Pimpernel.
Star of the motion picture Red Shoes, as Baroness Orczy's immortal character, the Scarlet Pimpernel.
Suddenly for my liking. One day there was great conflict between England and the revolutionary government of France, and the next everything was serene and peaceful. But the calm was an uneasy calm. Tony Dewhurst and I sensed a powerful undercurrent that somehow failed to touch other revelers at a party given in London by the Prince of Wales.
Well, what do you make of it, Blakeney?
I don't know, Tony. I don't like it, though.
Our French friends from across the Channel seem to be attending in great numbers. A lot of official tricolour insignias about.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I wouldn't be surprised to see Citizen Chauvelin himself at this point. Well, speak of the devil. There he is now.
Who? Where?
Just about to be announced, my dear fellow.
Citizen Chauvelin of the French Committee of Public Safety.
Chauvelin. You were right. Oh, but what does it mean?
It would seem to mean that an official hand is being extended in friendship.
We know better than that. Chauvelin hates us. If he had his way, France would declare war on England tomorrow.
Wouldn't think so to look at him, would you? Look at him smile and shake hands with the prince.
Yes, he... Look, there's going to be some sort of an announcement.
Hear ye, me lords and ladies. Attend the prince.
My dear friends, I know you have been curious about the guest of honor. Tonight we have a most pleasant surprise.
Oh, really? Now.
It is no secret to any of us that of recent years there has been great friction between our empire and the new Republic of France. Tonight that friction is at an end. I have asked Monsieur Well, or rather, a citizen, Chauvelin of France, to tell you of the new and wonderful development between our two nations and to introduce the guest of honor.
Bravo!
What the nation's telling? We'll soon find out.
Dame, lords and ladies, citizen Chauvelin.
Citizens of England, your French comrades salute you. In France, we have a new government, a republic. No longer shall we view each other with suspicion across that small body of water that separates our countries. And so, it is my privilege to introduce to this court the new ambassador from the French Republic, citizen Raymond Dulac. Bravo!
Citizen Raymond Dulac, ambassador from France.
Tony and I stared at each other, and the doubt in my mind was reflected in his eyes. The members of the court surged forward to greet the new ambassador. It gave us an opportunity to slip out into the gardens.
Raymond Dulac, he's never been an enemy of England. He's actually a man we can trust. He's opposed the more radical factions of France in every
turn. Yes, including Chauvelin.
What do you mean?
Chauvelin is powerful enough to hand-pick the ambassador from his country, Tony.
Yes.
Why would he select his own enemy? If Dulac hadn't been so popular with the more conservative French revolutionists, Chauvelin would have sent him to the guillotine long ago. He hates Dulac.
Well, then what's his purpose in sending him here?
I don't know. But I doubt if it means the peace we hope it means. There's somebody coming down the path.
It's Chauvelin.
We better... No. Stay.
Chicot? Is that you, Citizen Chicot?
Oh! Monsieur Chauvelin.
Who? Oh.
I just felt the need of some air. A walk through the garden.
Well, at least you won't be seeking that fictitious Scarlet Pimpernel fellow you're always talking about. Now that our countries are going to be friends, you can rest on your laurels, huh?
You are perfectly right, Sir Percy. But we will discuss it another time, shall we? You will pardon me if I continue my walk.
You know, Tony, we really should greet the new ambassador. Wouldn't do to be rude, you know.
Might have known the ladies wouldn't come. Good heavens, Blakeney, Chicot.
Beginning to remember, are you?
Well, that's the man the French whisper about, the one they call the assassin.
That's right, Tony. You know his reputation?
Well, only that each time Chauvelin or other members of the tribunal have wanted to get rid of an enemy too popular or powerful to be sentenced to the guillotine...
The mysterious citizen Chicot has carried out the sentence as an unofficial executioner by assassination and murder.
In a moment, Marius Goring returns as the Scarlet Pimpernel. Marius Goring as the Scarlet Pimpernel.
Swiftly, we slipped back into the ballroom of the palace.
and I saw Tony start his casual round with the members of the League. I was proud of him. Not a flicker of expression from any of them as he passed the word. I made my way through the crowd, searching sharply for the face of Ambassador Dulac, until I was stopped suddenly by a hand on my arm.
My, but you're in a devilish hurry, Blakeney.
It was the Prince of Wales.
I've spent a half hour building up your reputation as a wit, and nobody's been able to find you.
I'm afraid my wit's only half what a wit is supposed to be, Your Royal Highness.
You see, madam.
And the gentleman is, as you say, a man who is a ready word.
Now, love me, Blakeney. In a moment, you'll be asking the court physician for a potion to alleviate eye strain.
Your pardon, sire, but the lady is so charming.
Gallantly said. And she'll be a welcome addition to all our court functions. This is Madame Renée Dulac.
Madame Dulac.
My husband is the new ambassador to your country, monsieur.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, well, now I have a double reason for offering my congratulations. For his post and his wife. If you'll excuse me, I'll go and find him.
Ambassador Dulac is in the library with the Lord Chancellor and will probably be there for the rest of the evening.
You dance very well after all, monsieur, even though your mind seems to be elsewhere. A woman does not find that flattering.
Oh, your pardon, madame.
Perhaps you may do me a service, monsieur, in which case I will forgive you.
I'd be delighted.
You are acquainted with Citizen Chauvelin?
Yes.
He has suggested that my husband and I find a place in the country somewhere near London. He said that many English gentlemen have estates that might be rented. Unfortunately, Citizen Chauvelin returns to Paris tomorrow, and I'm afraid such arrangements are left to me. Do you know of a place, monsieur?
A place to rent? I wouldn't think of it, madame. There is room at my estate. You and your husband must be my guests.
Oh, Monsieur Blakeney, you are most kind.
I wasn't being kind. It had struck me suddenly. The assassin would strike after Chauvelin returned to Paris, not tonight. And when he did strike, it would be with an Englishman singled out to be accused of the murder of Dulac. I had volunteered more than my estate, because in volunteering it, I had also made myself the logical choice to be accused of the murder and precipitate my country into war with France.
In a moment, Marius Goring returns as the Scarlet Pimpernel. Marius Goring as the Scarlet Pimpernel.
I moved the ambassador and Madame Dulac into my country home and waited for the assassin to strike. For nerve-wracking days and nights, Tony and I kept watch on the grounds, on the tavern in the village, looking for a strange face, a French accent. There was nothing.
Monsieur Blakeney, or should I address you as The Scarlet Pimpernel?
Well, I'm certain I don't know what the devil you're talking about, monsieur. Nor do I know how you got into my house.
Oh, that was comparatively simple. Your servants are accustomed to taking wine in the evening, and your friends in the scullery also indulge a small sleeping portion.
Oh, I say, if you've come to rob the house, do please take what you want and get out.
Oh, come, Monsieur Blakeney, you needn't act for me. I have been over this study very carefully. In the upper right-hand drawer of your desk, in a small box to the rear, is a ring with the Scarlet Pimpernel insignia. I would not make any sudden move, monsieur. My finger on the trigger of this pistol can also be quite sudden.
Yes, I'm certain it could be Citizen Chicon.
Ah, you know my name?
From a dozen assassinations.
Walk to the desk. Now, be seated, monsieur.
What do you want? A letter of recommendation to Citizen Chauvelin?
No, monsieur. Something more tender. A love letter from you to Madame Dulac. Pick up the pen, monsieur, and write as I dictate. Now you must sign the letter, monsieur. Just the first name will do. Do not hesitate, monsieur. There is no help at hand.
If you look behind you, you'll see.
There is nobody behind me, monsieur.
You hear that, Tony?
Yes, I heard.
What?
Cut him! Oh, nice work, Blakeney. I heard you raise your voice just as I started up the stairs.
Thought I heard you come in.
Oh, what was that other noise in here?
I opened and shut the desk drawers a couple of times to cover your footsteps on the stairs. Better pick up that pistol.
Yes.
No, monsieur. Don't pick it up. It will make a perfect twin for the one I am holding.
It was René Dulac, standing in the doorway like something out of a dream. But the moonstone eyes had grown hot and smoky with the light of fanaticism.
You complimented me on the graceful way I move, Monsieur Blakeney. Thanks to that grace, I do not need any sounds to cover my approach.
Oh, Madame Dulac, you don't understand this man.
Don't bother, Tony. She understands perfectly. Don't you, Madame?
You think a woman like me marries an old fool like Dulac without purpose? Come, monsieur. We must awaken my husband, and when we do, I shall kill him. Then you may have the gun, Monsieur Blakeney, and the credits.
Your friend Chicon is regaining consciousness, Madame. You'll need his services, won't you, to take my letter to Chauvelin, so that it may be published to the world and used as a white paper for war.
Exactly right, Monsieur Blakeney. Help him up.
I can get up by myself.
Not at all, old friend. Let me help you. I moved towards him, but he wasn't my objective. The pistol he held was still on the floor a few inches from his hand. But he sensed what I was going to do, and as I reached for the pistol, our hands gripped it at the same instant.
No, no!
Let go!
Fire, René! Kill him!
Look out, Blakeney!
I saw Tony leap towards her, and at the same moment I saw a flash, and something hot ripped across my head. I staggered to my feet for a moment, but everything swirled into a red haze and disappeared. When I recovered, Tony was bathing my head with cold water.
Come on, Blakeney. Come on.
Oh, what happened?
That's a head wound. She hit you, but not too bad. Not the way she got hit.
She got hit? How?
Chicon. He was trying to hit me, but his aim was bad. He hit René.
How badly?
She's over there. She's dead.
Dead? Chicon.
Bolted to the stairs. I imagine Kent and Harding have him pinned down there. Now, they must have heard us.
No, they've been drugged. So was Dulac and the servants. Chicon is getting away with that letter.
Good evening, my lord. A
bad night out there, sir.
It is indeed a bad night. I'm looking for another traveler who might have come this way, less than an hour ago.
Only one I've seen is a Frenchman, my lord.
Where is he?
Oh, a nervous one he is. Keeps going out in the storm. He's out there now on the bulkhead out back. Sea could wash him right off.
Thank you.
You ain't going out there too, are you, my lord?
Only for a moment.
Couldn't go any further, could you, Chicot?
Are you?
Yes, Chicot, me, the Scarlet Pimpernel. You killed a woman tonight, Chicot. I'm taking you back to London.
No, monsieur, I am taking you with me.
He clawed wildly at my throat, and we grappled just as a wave struck. We tumbled over the railing and into the sea. I felt the icy water pound against the wound in my head, and I gasped for breath as the water choked me. Chicot lost his grip on me. I reached out for him in the blackness. My hand closed on something that felt like a giant web. And for the second time that evening, I lost consciousness.
Come on, my lord, come on. Take some of this hot fish chowder.
Oh, I'm all right.
I saw you fall, my lord, and I called my man. Lucky he'd hung his nets out back there. Your hand got caught and twisted in one, and they was able to pull you up. I'm afraid there ain't much hope for the Frenchman, though. They're still looking at back there, but he's drowned for sure.
In a moment, Marius Goring returns as the Scarlet Pimpernel. Marius Goring as the Scarlet Pimpernel.
Come in.
A letter from England, Citizen Chauvelin.
Ah, yes. Give it to me. How I have waited for this.
This is
not the writing of Chicot. Sacre bleu!
What is it, citizen? What does it say?
None of your business! Out of here!
They seek him here. They seek him there. They seek their assassin everywhere. Is Chicot in heaven or is he in hell? Dispatched by the hand of the Pimpernel.
Adventures of the Scarlet Pimpernel, starring Marius Goring, with music composed and conducted by Sidney Torch. Produced by Harry Allen Towers.
back in just a moment.
Good morning, Mrs. Dragon. It's a fine day, isn't it?
A fine day for frogs and fishes, Mr. Peddler. Not so fine for dragons.
Well, we do need the rain. What can I do for you today?
Daryl and I are hosting the family gathering again, and I need to stock up. We certainly don't want the Dragon Clan ravaging the countryside like last year at Cousin Daphne's.
Oh, indeed not. Indeed not. Just what are your needs, Mrs. Dragon?
Well, first, I need 2 dozen virgins.
Dear me, if you'd asked before Midsummer's Day, it would have been no problem. But this late in the season, I do have plenty of damsels in distress.
Are they virgins?
Well, no, that's why they're in distress.
Well, I don't know.
Tell you what, Mrs. Dragon, if you take 12 damsels, I'll throw in a free dwarf.
Oh, okay. The kids do like to torment dwarves, but I still need the virgins. Granny Dragon is very particular, and if Granny isn't happy, nobody's happy.
Oh, I know how that goes, Mrs. Dragon. Say, I have some knights in shining armor. They each come with a squire and a horse.
Well, they might provide some entertainment, but they're so hard to get out of the can. Very well. Give me 6 knights, Mr. Peddler. Do you have any virgins at all?
I've got 7 in the cage, but a couple of them are rather dubious.
I'll take them. Oh, and podcasts, are they still on back order?
Yes, Mrs. Dragon, I can't seem to keep them in stock.
Mrs. Firebreath was saying something about a secret website.
Oh, it's no secret. People in the know all about it.
Would you clue me in, Mr. Peddler?
Sure. It's www.americanradiotheater.org.
www.americanradiotheater.org. Granny Dragon loves those things. She can put her headphones on, close her eyes, and ignore the mayhem erupting around her. Well, what's the damage, Mr. Peddler?
Let's see. 12 damsels in distress, 6 knights with squires and horses, and 7 virgins. That'll be 2.5 pounds of flesh.
Oh, that's rather high.
Well, I'm tossing the dwarf in for free. There's a package discount on the knights, squires, and horses. I'll give you the 2 dubious virgins for half price. That's 2.25 pounds.
Oh, what about returns if we don't use everything?
You can return everything except the virgins.
All right. Put it on my account. I'll settle up at the 1st of the month when Daryl's endangered species check comes in.
Have a great family gathering, Mrs. Dragon. I'll let you know if I can turn up any more virgins.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Peddler. My, that's a lot of cages.
Yes, ma'am. Don't forget to keep the damsels and virgins separate. They don't get along at all.
Oh.
Here, I'll get the door for you.
Thank you, Mr. Peddler.
My pleasure, Mrs. Dragon.
We return to Treasures Old and New from ART. For a shift back to the days of old-time radio, let's listen in to part of the Railroad Hour, which is really only a half an hour.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Railroad Hour. And here comes the star-studded show train. Tonight, the Association of American Railroads presents the great Broadway musical success, Brigadoon, starring Gordon McRae and his 2 guests, Jane Powell and Clark Dennis. Our choir is under the direction of Norman Luboff, and the music is arranged and conducted by Carmen Dragon. Yes, tonight another big musical hit is brought to you, transcribed by the American Railroads, the same railroads that bring you most of the food you eat, the clothes you wear, the fuel you burn, and all the other things you use in your daily life. And now here is our star, Gordon McRae.
Thank you, Marvin Miller, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, Clark Dennis and the lovely singing star of the screen, Jane Powell, join me in bringing you one of the most charming musicals in recent years, the delightful Scotch fantasy, Brigadoon.
Thank you.
murky brain. There in the Highlands of Scotland, two weary hunters lost their way. And this is what happened, the strange thing that happened to two weary hunters.
Fine game hunters we are. We come all the way over from New York, and the first night out, we get lost.
Maybe we took the high road instead of the low road.
Wait a minute. Do you hear that?
Uh-huh.
Look. Down there in the valley. A town.
But I thought you said there were no towns listed on the map around here.
I did. But there's certainly one there. With a peculiar heavy fog all around it.
Well, that's strange. There's no other mist in the valley except over that village.
Let's walk over to it. Can't be very far. Come on. I beg your pardon, miss. Could you tell us where we are?
Of course. You're in Brigadoon.
Brigadoon? There's no town called Brigadoon on the map.
I shouldn't be surprised. It isn't on the map for good and sound reasons.
What's everybody all dressed up for?
Oh, there's a big wedding going to take place today.
Yours?
No, my sister's.
You're not married already, are you?
Oh, no. No, I never found anyone up till now who could make me think of it. You see, many a lassie, as everyone knows, will try to be married before 25. So she'll agree to most any proposal. All he must be is a man and alive. I hold a dream and there's no compromising. I know there's one certain lady for me. One day he'll come walking o'er the horizon. But should he not, then an old maid I'll be. Foolishy missy, foolish I will stay, waiting for my dearie, and happy am I to hold my heart till he comes strolling by. When he comes, my dearie, one look and I'll know that he's the dearie I've been wanting so. Strolling by, for you see, I believe that there's a laddie pretty and a woman free who's waiting for my
A girl like you shouldn't have any trouble finding the right boy.
Ah, well, thank you, sir. Are you from England?
No, we're from America.
America?
Yes. We came to Scotland on a hunting trip, and right away we got lost in the forest. We've been walking around all night.
Oh, then he must be very tired and hungry. There's a little tavern on the next street where you can get some food.
Oh, sounds good to me. Let's go, Tommy.
Well, you go on ahead, Jeff. I want to make a call first. Is there a phone around here?
A phone?
Oh, yes.
I didn't think we have one.
No phones? Say, what kind of a nutty town is this, anyway?
Brigadoon is a wonderful town. And if you don't like it, well, you can go back where you came from.
You don't like me very much, do you?
I like you very much. I just didn't like what you said. Now, hadn't you better be joining your friend at the tavern?
What are you going to do?
Gather some heather for the wedding.
May I go with you?
No, I'll do it much faster alone.
I won't bother you, really. Maybe I'm the one who's slightly nutty, but...
And we two go walking together out beyond the valley of trees, out where there's a hillside of heather curtsying gently in the breeze. That's what I'd like to do, see the heather but with you. Mr. May is in the gloaming, and all the clouds are holding still. So take my hand and let's go roaming through the heather on the hill.
The morning dew is blinking yonder.
As rich and rare, there may be other springs as full and fair.
But they won't be the same. They'll come and go.
For this I know, that when the mist is in the gloaming,
and all the clouds are holding still,
all the clouds are holding still,
things if you want to. Come now, let's be off.
Good morning, darling.
Oh, good morning to you, Charlie. This is,
My name's Tommy Albright.
Mine's Fiona McLaren, and this is Charlie Dalrymple. He's marrying my sister today.
I'm glad to know you, Charlie.
Well, thank you. I was hunting for the schoolmaster, Fiona. I wanted to ask him something about the miracle.
The what?
Shh, Charlie.
What did he say about a miracle?
Oh, it's just a saying we have here in Brigadoon. I'll explain it to you later.
But I...
Charlie, you won't forget to come over this afternoon and sign the family Bible, hmm?
No, I'll be over all right, but now I have some errands to do. Glad to have met you.
Same here. Now, what was that business about a miracle?
Oh, that. I'm sorry. I cannot say.
But you said you'd tell me later.
I know, but I cannot say.
Fiona?
I?
If I stuck around here today, would you take me to the wedding?
Oh, why do you suddenly want to stay?
I kinda say.
Oh, of course I'll take you. And now are you going to help me gather the heather, or are you too tired?
Tired? Why, I never felt better in my whole life.
Maybe the sun gave me the power, for I could swim like a woman and be home in half an hour. Maybe the air gave me the drive, for I'm all aglow and all alive. What a day this has been. What a rare mood I'm in. Why, it's almost like being in love. There's a smile on my face for the whole human race. Why, it's almost like being in love. All the music of life seems to be like a bell that is ringing for me. And from the way that I feel when that bell starts to peal, I would swear I was falling. I could swear I was falling. It's almost like being in love.
Bye.
fine.
Hawaiians are most like bees.
Like a bell that is ringing for me.
And the bell that I feel, when the bells start to peal,
I would swear I was falling.
I could swear I was falling.
It's almost like being
Return to the second act of Brigadoon in just a moment. But first, from the very beginning of railroads in America, there have been problems to face and to solve. First, there was the problem of getting railroads built to keep pace with the expanding needs of a rapidly growing nation. By the beginning of the present century, that task was nearly completed, and the railroads were turning to their new problem of intensive improvement of plant and equipment to meet the increasing transportation demands of a productive America. Today, there are only about 35,000 more miles of railroad line than there were half a century ago. But the total mileage of all tracks, including yards and sidings and additional main running tracks, has gone up four times that much. And mile for mile, today's tracks are far better and safer than those of 50 years ago. And this is just one measurement of how the railroads build for greater capacity, efficiency, economy, and safety. There aren't many more locomotives, for example, than there were 50 years ago. But the average locomotive has more than double the power and far more than double the performance ability of the locomotives of 1900. There aren't many more freight cars, but the total carrying capacity of the freight car fleet today has increased nearly three times, and the actual freight performance of the railroads has quadrupled. As the new railroads go into the second half of the century, they face new problems, but they have the use of the better plant and equipment which they have built with railroad money in the years just past. And in the years ahead, they will continue their program of improvement and progress to the end that they shall be able to produce better transportation service with the greatest possible dependability and efficiency and at the lowest possible cost. And now here is the second act of Brigadoon, starring Gordon McRae and his two guests, Jane Powell and Clark Dennis.
Charlie. I'm glad you're here. Now take this quill and sign the wedding paragraph from the family Bible before you forget it.
Very well, lass. Charles McPherson Dalrymple. There, it is done. Now where's Jeannie?
She's upstairs dressing, but you can't see her, Charlie. She's bad luck for the groom to see the bride afore a wedding.
Jeannie! Jeannie, darling!
Charlie, you can't see her.
Jeannie. Come to me, bend to me, kiss me good day. Darling, my darling, 'tis all I can say. Just come to me, bend to me, kiss me. Because they've told me I can't behold ye till wedding music starts playing. To ease my longing, there's nothing wrong in me standing out here and saying,
oh, come to me, bend to me, kiss.
And don't forget to make Jeannie be in time for the wedding.
Now, don't you be late. Tommy?
Yes?
Would he and Jeff bring some of that heather in here and pretty up the room for the wedding, huh?
Anything you say, Fiona.
Thank you, Tommy. Now, give me a bunch of it, and I'll take it up to Jeannie for a wedding bouquet.
Here you are, darling.
Thank you, dearie. I won't be long.
Well, so it's darling and dearie now, is it? I guess it's time we were starting back.
There's no hurry, Jeff. Let's stay for the wedding. Then we can...
Wait a minute. Look at this.
What?
This Bible. Read what it says here.
Fiona, born October 10th, 1722. Jean, born April 8th, 1728.
And get this. Married Jean McLaren to Charles McPherson Dalrymple, May 24th, 1746.
Wait a minute. No Brigadoon on the map. No phones in the whole town. Something about a miracle. Fiona?
Aye, Tommy. What is it?
Is this your name here in this Bible?
Aye,
but what's the explanation?
You must talk with our schoolmaster, Mr. Lindley, about that. He's the only one who can explain about Brigadoon.
Well, let's go and see Mr. Lundy right now.
Very well, Mr. Albright. If Fiona insists, I'll tell you everything. But let me warn you beforehand, you won't believe a word I say. What happened in Brigadoon was a miracle, and most folks didn't believe in miracles.
Go on.
200 years ago this very day, we had an old minister of the Kirk in Brigadoon named Mr. Forsythe.
Oh, and a good man he was.
The kindest in Scotland. He knew he was getting old, and he wanted to protect the people of Brigadoon from the evils of the outside world after he died. So he went out to a hill beyond Brigadoon and prayed that Brigadoon and all the people in it should vanish into the healing mist.
Vanish?
Aye. But not for always. Brigadoon was to return just as it was, for one day every 100 years.
It's incredible.
You see, in this way, Mr. Forsythe figured there would be no change in the lives of the people. We'd all go on living our customary lives, but just wouldn't be in any century long enough to be touched by it.
And all this happened 200 years ago.
Aye, lad. Which, you see, is only 2 days ago to us. For when we awakened the morning after Mr. Forsythe had prayed for the miracle, he was gone. And it was 100 years later.
Look, Mr. Lundy, I'm not saying I believe all this. But just for argument's sake, suppose a stranger like me came to Brigadoon and wanted to stay. Could he?
Aye. Mr. Forsythe provided for that. A stranger can stay if he loves someone in Brigadoon enough to want to give up everything to be with that person. Which is how it should be. Because after all, lad, if you love someone deeply enough, anything is possible.
I think I like that part best.
But at night when you go to sleep, what's it like?
Well, sometimes at night, I seem to hear strange voices. No words I can remember. Just voices from the outside world, filled with a fearful longing. You know, there must be lots of folks out there who'd like a Brigadoon.
I left our knapsacks at the tavern. I'm going down to get them. We must leave right after the wedding.
Okay, Jeff.
What are you thinking, Tommy? You're so quiet.
It isn't real. None of it's real. This town isn't real. You aren't real, and this feeling.
Oh, what feeling, Tommy? Tell me what you feel.
Well,
this is hard to say, but as I wandered through the lea, I felt for just a fleeting moment that I suddenly was free of being lonely. Then I closed my eyes and saw the very reason why. saw a man with his head bowed low. His heart had no place to go. I looked and I thought to myself with a sigh, there but for you go on. I saw a man walking by the sea, alone with the tide was he. I looked and I thought as I watched him go by, there but for you go I. Lonely men around me, trying not to cry, till the day you found me, there among them was I. I saw a man who had never known a love that was all his own. I thought as I thanked all the stars in the sky, there but for you, go.
Oh, Tommy, Tommy, darling.
I love you, Fiona. I guess that's all there is to it.
Oh, I wanted to hear you say it, even though it be at the last minute like this.
The last minute?
You're going to leave Brigadoon. I know it.
It isn't that I don't love you.
You mean you're not sure you can accept everything?
That's about it.
Well, then you must go. I'll miss you, but I think I'll be less lonely now than I was before you came. I think real loneliness is not being in love in vain, but not being in love at all.
Up, Tommy. With luck, we can reach the mountain before dark. You know, for a while, I was afraid you were going to stay in that Highland voodoo town. Yep, they were right. Brigadoon is vanishing into the mist again. Ah, you'll forget all about that place. Yes, and about that girl, too, once we get back to civilization.
I think real loneliness is not being in love in vain, but not being in love at all.
You're right, Fiona. You understood, but I didn't.
Tommy, who are you talking to?
Jeff, I believe in her. I believe in Brigadoon, and I'm going back.
Tommy, you can't. It's dark, and Brigadoon has already disappeared.
Even so, I'm going back.
Look, Jeff. Look. The mist is rising again.
Brigadoon is still there.
And here comes the schoolmaster.
Tommy! Tommy, lad. You must really love her.
You woke us all up. Brigadoon had disappeared and you brought it back again. Remember what I told you? When you love someone deeply enough, anything is possible. Even miracles.
Tommy!
Fiona. Oh, Fiona.
So long, Tommy. So long, Jeff.
You're gonna stay.
I'm going to stay forever.
When a bell starts to peal,
I would swear I was falling.
I could swear I was falling. It's all so
gentlemen. And a big vote of thanks to our two guests, Jane Powell and Clark Dennis, and to the other members of our cast, Ted Osborne and Peter Leeds, for their fine performances in tonight's production of Brigadoon. Next week, the lovely Metropolitan Opera soprano Dorothy Kirsten will join Francis X. Bushman and myself in presenting the wonderful music of Fritz Kreisler and Victor Jacobi in the romantic operetta Apple Blossoms. The Railroad Hour is brought to you each week at this time by the Association of American Railroads. Right now, a reminder. The Association has just published a new and revised edition of the fascinating and informative booklet, Quiz on Railroads and Railroading. It's crammed with interesting information in question and answer form, plus many exciting photographs of railroads in action. I know you'll find this quiz book every bit as interesting as I have. And now here's Marvin Miller to tell you how to get your copy without charge.
Friends, to receive your free copy of this highly informative quiz book, just send your name and address to The Railroad Hour, Transportation Building, Washington 6, D.C. That address again is The Railroad Hour, Transportation Building, Washington 6, D.C.
All aboard!
Well, it looks as though we're ready to pull out, and so until next week, goodbye.
Tonight's performance of Brigadoon was transcribed in Hollywood and adapted by Gene Holloway from the musical play Brigadoon, with book and lyrics by Alan J. Lerner and music by Frederick Lowy, as produced at the Ziegfeld Theater in New York City by Cheryl Crawford. Gordon McRae appeared by arrangement with Warner Brothers, producers of The Hasty Heart, starring Ronald Reagan, Patricia Neal, and Richard Todd. Jane Powell appeared by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of East Side, West Side, starring Barbara Stanwyck, James Mason, and Van Heflin. Our choir is under the direction of Norman Luboff, and our music is arranged and conducted by Carmen Dragon. This is Marvin Miller saying goodbye until next week for the Association of American Railroads.
Gee, that's all I've got time for today. Please check out our podcast on our website, www.AmericanRadioTheater.org. You know, we put up a new podcast every month. If you want to hang out with other folks playing old-time radio, it's RadioOutOfThePast.org in the Fred Bertelson Room. On Thursdays from 5:30 Pacific, that's 8:30 Eastern, and also on Saturday, 6 o'clock Pacific, that's 9 o'clock Eastern. Hope to see you soon!